The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme. Now we are moving on to another area, another topic altogether. We've been joined in studio by Michael Common, who is trainer and founder of Fly Fearless, and also by David Horgan, MD of Petrel Resources. And we are going to talk a little bit now about the consequences of the bringing down of the Malaysian aircraft and the crash in Mali and the disappearance of the other Malaysian plane, whatever number of months ago. Now, I know that you specifically, first of all, you're very welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
I know that you specifically deal with training people, but what I'm curious to know is, like, I've heard conversations around the place saying, I don't think I'd ever book with Malaysian Airlines, and somebody else said, no, you'd be safer with them now than you ever would. That people who were grand are kind of thinking, God, I don't know about this flying business.
We had a great bit of focus on that because we ran a programme yesterday, and one of the people on the programme is actually flying with Malaysian Airlines next week. So there's focus for you. And I had a chat with him during one of the coffee breaks and said, you know, how do you feel about this? And he said, well, if you're going to go on odds and statistics, he says it's going to be the safest aeroplane in the sky. And I can even tell you from an aviation perspective, that from that point of view, there's one aircraft where everyone's going to be paying attention. So, you know, from a point of view of that and a pure factual approach to it, I think that's a good odd.
You're a pilot yourself.
I was indeed, yes. Yeah. I'm an instructor now.
Yeah. When you see these stories, because I read a story the other day that the Malaysian Airlines pilots are getting a bit more nervous.
They are. There's a couple of the cabin crew particularly have expressed a fear of flying. But you see, this is where it all boils down to it. It's about the difference between fear and danger. If you think about it, if there's an actual clear and present danger, then you react to it. But a lot of people with the fear of flying have manifested a fear about something where there's absolutely no danger. You know, they hear a chime and they think that's impending doom. It's actually the cabin crew looking for more paninis down the back. So, you know, it is about any approach or any assistance to people in that space is about making sure they're absolutely clear what is dangerous and what is not. And truly, people say to me, am I afraid of flying in any particular situation? And I would never be afraid, but I would be absolutely careful about flying on, for example, certain aircraft in certain countries under certain conditions. So I think, you know, if you're going to manage your fear of flying, it's about being a more discerning passenger rather than simply, you know, fearless totally.
Or stay at home for your holidays.
Well, that's the shame. Because, you know, if you go to the statistical side of it, you're far more dangerous on the road to the airport than you are actually on the airplane itself. You know, so statistically, that's the one of them.
It doesn't feel that way, though, does it?
I know. Well, we had a funny moment yesterday in the sense that one of the engineers in the simulators came up to me and he saw a couple of the people from the course on a cigarette break. And he said to me, are they afraid of flying? I said, yes. He says, to be far more worried about the cigarettes. Because again, if you're going to go on the statistics, you've a 1 in 2 chance of coming to a sticky end as against going on an aeroplane where, you know, the odds are almost incalculable.
David Horgan, you do a fair amount of gadding around this world, don't you?
I certainly do, but look, everyone dies eventually. There's no point worrying about things.
Yeah, but most people aren't in a fierce rush to die, if you know what I mean.
Well, worry about things that you can influence. And once you're on an airliner, there's nothing you can do. So there's no point worrying about it. I mean, you're right. Statistically, it's like winning the lotto in reverse. It's a low probability of a major event. Mm. Now, we're talking about civil aviation. If you go on little planes in jungles and in mountains, it's much more dangerous. And most of the scary incidents I've had have been like that. Like you're flying into the Amazon or into equatorial Africa. You're supposed to land on a little strip. And then as you come in to land, you see a big tree has fallen down or an elephant has wandered across it. Then there's a slight concern. You're looking for some clearing to land on. But so far, it's always worked.
So it doesn't bother you at all. And I thought I was hallucinating last night, late at night. There was an incident in Toronto Airport of, I can't remember which airline it was, but there was somebody taken off and it was thought that he had a bomb. Do you find yourself, even though you would give out stink to yourself for doing it, glancing at people, you know, as you're getting on the plane and saying, I wonder.
But after 7-7 in London, if you were on the underground, which is a great way to get round, although it's hot, there were definitely people looking at anyone dressed like a Muslim with a bag or a coat, mm-hmm. there were definitely people looking. You could feel the tension. And then you say, well, this is ridiculous. You know, the last thing you're going to do is bomb the underground
yeah.
2 weeks after a 7-7.
The other thing to look out for, of course, is cabin crew are astutely aware of the people on the aircraft themselves. And they can always spot the nervous passenger because they're the one actually paying attention to the safety demonstration. All the regular flyers don't pay any attention to it at all.
Which must be very discouraging.
It's
if
very
you're
annoying
a cabin
for them.
Crew.
It is absolutely, yeah. yeah. Because, you know, and to the sense that it's a really important thing and every aircraft is different. But there's that fear danger thing again. The regular person who travels every single week or backwards and forwards to London believes that there's no danger because they know how to do it. Whereas the nervous passenger is paying absolute attention and is probably better off for doing that.
I remember getting told off rotten once on an EasyJet flight from Luton to Liverpool, which was then Speke Airport before they renamed it John Lennon International Airport, because I was reading a newspaper during the safety demonstration and I was instructed to put it down and watch. Now, I did point out to her that knowing that there was a life jacket under my seat was not going to be a huge help if the plane was about to land, it was about to crash on the way to Liverpool, because there weren't, you know, a life jacket wasn't going to be an awful lot of help if we were hurtling
towards the
M6. Funnily
enough, children ask you those sensible questions,
exactly.
you know.
but I mean, Colin, to defend the cabin crew, I'll say to you that most people in an evacuation go to the wrong exit. Yeah. Go to the exit in front, the one that came in, and you'll always hear the cabin crew say, your nearest exit may be behind you. Mm-hmm. So it's about awareness, not fear. It's about being switched on and situationally aware, and that'll keep you safe.
Don't you think, though, that the reason why most of us are terrified of plane crashes is just the very thought of the nature of the incident? I mean, it's you're so out of control and the outcome is almost so inevitable that there's absolutely nothing that you can do in those
circumstances. Well, there's a statistic opportunity for you straight away. I mean, if you go back to 2013, there were 90 commercial aircraft accidents and only 10% of them involved any fatalities. So if you are going to be in an accident, 90% of the time you're going to get out of that aircraft safely.
I was kind of with Colin. I thought, well, your number's up.
That's the point. You're not. You know, the aircraft design, the ability of the aircraft to withstand anything that should happen. The landing on the Hudson's a perfect example.
Well, that was amazing. Yes. Yeah.
It was something that every pilot has practiced and over again in a flight simulator. Captain Sullenberger gets all the credit, but any pilot would have been able to do the same.
Are you sure?
We've tried it
we're
on the simulator.
Sure
on
the same time.
Do these kind of accidents get to you at all, Ursula?
Oh yeah, they do. Especially now, the what happened with the Malaysian aircraft, and especially the human costs in that. There's one family. I have children, and one of the families in the they were in the crash lost all of their children, all three children, and the father of one of the couple. You know the way. So the grandfather travelled back with three children to Australia, and that struck me. You know the way when I saw the pictures and so on. You immediately think, oh God, look, what would happen if you send your kids off
to
somewhere
yeah.
or, you know, the way with somebody, with a relative, and then you just get this phone call and all your kids are gone. You know, all your whole family, your whole next generation is wiped out. So, yes, that puts some, it's not just fear, it's unbelievable, you know, the human tragic, the loss, what can happen, you know, what humans have to suffer in this life. It's incredible. But I wouldn't be so fearful of flying itself, okay? So there I would, because there I agree with our people here who know a lot about statistics, because statistically you are most likely, or if there's a likelihood of dying, you know, the way when you prepare for a flight, it's actually going down the stairs in your house, getting ready. That's the most likely event where you could die. Okay, and then maybe again, if you get into the car, if you drive yourself to the airport, especially if you're already a bit nervous about the flight and you're not as good on the road, because obviously traffic accidents, another big thing. So that's where the real fear should be, not necessarily once you've gone into the plane. But why people are there very fearful is obviously because they give control away. Mm-hmm. You see, they're just sitting down and they're in no control any longer. And that's, I think, what you are fearful of.
David, you were telling, I think it was Susan, that during the Lebanese war, that you were flying in and out of Baghdad and that sometimes it was a bit scary.
Well, when I was a student, we decided to go to Pakistan, and for some reason, Syrian Arab Airways were a third of the price of anybody else. And it was only when we were flying over Beirut and looking at what we thought was lightning that we realised why. The plane was empty and it was so cheap. And we were buzzed by Israeli fighters. But they didn't do anything and we landed fine, it worked. Then going into Baghdad, you had a corkscrew because even then they were worried about shoulder launch missiles, but they reckoned that they could secure the airport for about 5 kilometres. So they reckoned that if you corkscrew within that 3 mile radius, that you would be okay. And while missiles were launched, no one was brought down. Planes were hit, but no one was brought down. And that made your stomach turn, mostly because you were worried about whether the wings were designed for these stresses, because they really turn very tight. But again, it's, you know, losing control. Why would you be afraid? These pilots are ex-South African Air Force. Yeah. They're tough. They've been in these situations before.
Right. But I've never been worried about flying, but I'm starting to get it.
I used to.
To be fair,
I used to come in and out of Sarajevo with the C-130 with the RAF. And they, when they came in, because of the humanitarian airlift and the chance of being locked on, they used to do what they call the Kaesang landing, which means they came in high over the airport and then they just directed it straight down, straight down. And on this occasion, I was in the cockpit with the pilot and he just aimed the C-130 right at the tarmac. But you get a warning from the loadmaster because he says, get ready to hold on tight. So when the plane goes into its direct descent, you feel you're going to be pulled out, I think, through the ceiling.
But that your stomach is going to go.
But then when it comes out of it, it's the floor you have to worry about. But these pilots, as the guys who said, that they were absolutely fantastic and specially trained in these, what they call the Kaesang landing, which was named after the Kaesang in Vietnam, where the Americans used to go in low to resupply Americans that were actually trapped by the Viet Cong.
Right.
They used to drop pallets of stuff. So yeah, they developed this very direct descent. But it is quite an experience.
Well, to put it back in perspective for anybody listening to us this afternoon who's heading to the airport going on their holidays to Malaga, you're not going to be doing that kind of approach. No. You're going to have two very sensible people who want to get home and collect their kids if they've left with somebody else, you know, and so that's not the issue for people at all. And it's amazing. It's one of the anxieties that if you sidled up to somebody in a pub and told them you were anxious about cotton wool or clowns or something, they'd laugh at you. But if you sidle up to somebody and say you don't like flying, they'll immediately tell you their story of their horrendous flight.
I was
into
going
somewhere
to tell you, and I wonder if I should stop. But the only thing that I remember is I was with a religious sister, and I thought, well, you know, I said to her, "You've got more pull up there than I do," and I'd say she'll never get on a plane again. It was a small plane again, and it was a Tornado, and it had that thing that every so often you'd get around it and round and round, and then bang, it would go right down again and your stomach would go out through the roof, put you off. But that was in Africa, and it was in landing on one. They had to make up a strip, you know, they had to find a place to come down, and I was absolutely petrified. And the pilot was training, so there were two pilots there, exhilarated, absolutely thrilled with the whole thing. But you've had some scary places to land too in Africa, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you go, say, into the interior, into the Central African Republic or Cameroon, it's 3 to 4 hours flight and you don't have enough fuel to get back. So you have to land. And some of the torrential rains, people may think it rains in Ireland, but it really rains in Africa. And you can't see, you know. But the key thing is the pilot should never lose their nerve. Eventually, they'll find a breach in the storm and eventually they'll find somewhere to land. But you notice the attention to detail, especially with the South Africans. When the plane lands, we're all celebrating. They're jumping out and turning manually the propellers because long experience has taught them that if you don't physically keep turning the equipment in the heat, that damage will be done to the ball bearings or the oil won't circulate properly. And it's the little details like that, the attention to detail, never losing their nerve, that gives you confidence.
Right.
I think for the common traveller at the same time, if you stand at Heathrow and see the amount of aircraft that take off and land every second, you know.
Dropping
out of the sky.
Yeah.
We have to have confidence.
Perhaps that's the wrong language.
Well, landing, exactly. I was looking at that.
Serenely.
Yes,
I apologise.
Like a butterfly with sore feet is the way one of my instructors would describe it, yes.
Yeah. I know, it's a safe, very safe mode of transport. Very safe. It's one of the safest. So that you should tell yourself when you're in.
Would you book on Malaysian Airlines next week?
I just unfortunately had my holidays, so I'm not allowed to any further holidays.
I probably
wouldn't mind. I don't think, because look, both cases now Malaysian Airlines had were not technical faults on the aircraft. Yeah. So it wasn't the aircraft, it wasn't the pilot.
How do you know?
We don't know about the first one, do we?
Well, okay, on the first one, yes, but it doesn't seem to look that way. It might have been just an unfortunate storm or something, because there's a lot of these type of events over, you know, the way those waters where the plane come down. So it could well be something. We haven't found the black box. I wouldn't be too worried about
that
airline.
You're shaking your head on that.
No, because, I mean, the pilot instinct is not to speculate. We wait until we have the facts. Mm-hmm. We respond to the facts, because if we speculate, we frighten other people, we frighten ourselves. And, you know, you wait until you have actual information and then you react to it. And there's a human need for certainty. I mean, the weeks following the Malaysian aircraft disappearing, you heard the conspiracy theories about gold on board and about all sorts of executives. And that was human nature. We needed data and we needed facts, and we made them up until we know. And I'd sooner wait until we find out. We will.
You believe we will?
I will. I think so. Oh. Yeah. There's very few mysteries, ultimately, you know, and certainly in terms of aviation. They're still looking for that aircraft. And, you know, when they find something, then we will know. If we don't, we'll work around it.
OK, we'll speculate further. Well, hopefully not. Anyway, sorry for anybody heading out to the airport at the moment, but what are the statistics again?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you're just even thinking about flying, you know, there are going to be 34 million flights this year with 3 billion people flying all safely.
Right, there's a caller in here saying, the only reason that there's a light on the aircraft life jacket is so that the sharks can find you in the water.
And the whistle is in case you land at a nearby rave. We've all heard them.
Right, OK. Please ask those experts how bad weather caused the Mali crash. We are always told this can't happen. Nervous flyer Rose.
Again, we don't know it was bad weather. We'll wait until we have the actual information. In exactly the same way with the unfortunate Air France accident years ago, which a lot of people still have in their memory, you know, that was put down to turbulence, and it wasn't. And then for years afterwards, it was supposed to have been caused by weather.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't. So, you know, the information void is immediately filled with something. And that's why our training is to wait until we have actual information. Right. We'll find out.
But weather can cause flights come down.
When?
Well, Taiwan.
Yeah, well, you may find that there's something that weather may be a contributing factor to it.
Yeah, well,
but another aircraft landing ahead of it or after it may not necessarily have the same outcome. You know, and that's the difference. There's never a single cause.
And whatever about flying with the Malaysian Airlines, I mean...
I don't want to do them down either, I
wouldn't have a concern about flying with Malaysian Airlines, but I was... It was one of my reactions afterwards was being interested that I almost would have assumed the planes wouldn't have been flying directly over Ukraine, where conflict was happening and where military aircraft, I mean, large military aircraft were being
separatists. But during the old Bosnia, Serbia, the planes flew over then, didn't they?
Well, most of the flights in at that stage were all humanitarian.
Yeah.
And remember, the United Nations...
ones going to other destinations.
Well, the United Nations had imposed an embargo against the Belgrade regime. So their Belgrade airport was practically closed.
Uh-huh.
But yes, there were flights coming in out, certainly out of Croatia, out of Zagreb, because I was on some of them. I think the fear now is because of this supposedly missile system, that these missiles now can reach up that far to the altitude where commercial aircraft fly. That's the big danger.
I don't know if you spotted it, but there was an interesting piece on the front of the Telegraph today as well about speculation now that there may well be a class action taken against Putin by the same legal firm who took the action against Gaddafi post-Lockerbie. It looks like they've been instructed to consider taking that action.
Another caller was on to say, you have not experienced flying until you try Aussie bush pilots flying between cattle stations. I've only one rule. I don't do single engines and single pilots, says John in Limerick. Well, I can't comment on that because I never did fly on any of those.
It's a good rule.
Right, okay. Is there any evidence of turbulence getting worse due to climate change? Well, that could lead us down the path for the next 10 years. Anyway, we are going to have to take a break now. My thanks to Michael Common for that particular bit of the programme, and we'll take a break.